by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, True Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Fishing season is always in here in Wyoming. Luckily, we have this opportunity with the North Platte River and ice fishing. And Janet, the summertime is a great time for families to get out and enjoy the waters that are all around Casper and Wyoming, not just Casper, but all over.
That's right. And, you know, one of the things that Wyoming Game and Fish Department always strives for is diversity. And a lot of that is getting different kinds of fish in different waters across the state, so that anglers that maybe just don't want to catch a walleye or they just don't want to catch brown trout can go for something different. And today I'm excited to have Matt Hahn, our fisheries supervisor for the Casper region, on to talk all about kokanee, why they're here, how we got them here, and what anglers can do to catch them.
I think there are probably a lot of people that are surprised when you said kokanee and in relation to Casper, because normally that wouldn't be something that you would think, right, Matt?
Yeah, I mean, for a long time, we didn't have kokanee here. You know, kokanee were basically always known as a flaming gorge species. You know, a few lakes up around Pinedale, kind of definitely that Green River drainage was about the only place in the state that had them. And we were able to get some. I think the first time we stocked them was in 2015 in Alcova. And we got some as part of an experiment. We were, at the time, we were looking for some alternate species to stock in some of our reservoirs that might be a little better at evading walleye predation than the rainbow trout were doing. And kokanee was one of the ones we tried in Alcova, like I said, on sort of an experimental basis, and it was really successful and really well received by the public, so we certainly kept doing it.
So today, that's 10 years now that kokanee have been in Alcova. Have they been stocked anywhere else and maybe didn't take off like they did at Alcova?
We've stocked them in Pathfinder Reservoir as well in our region. And we don't have a lot of good information on how they're doing in Pathfinder. We've been stocking them annually for about 7 years in Pathfinder. We get a little bit of information from our trout gill netting on kokanee, but very little. Kokanee are really hard to sample just due to the nature that species tends to be out suspended over deep water. And there's not a lot of sampling gears that can really efficiently target fish like that. So most of the information we have on how they're doing in Pathfinder is pretty anecdotal. We rely on kokanee, especially, we really rely on creel survey information because, you know, if anglers are out there catching them and we can check them at the boat ramp and we can get lengths and weights and things like that off of harvested fish, that gives us, really boosts our sample size from what we were able to capture ourselves. But, you know, hardly anybody's really been fishing kokanee at Pathfinder, so we don't have a whole lot of information on Pathfinder, other than we know there's a lot of them that run up. We see a lot of redfish run the Miracle Mile in the fall, so we know they're doing just fine in Pathfinder, but we don't have a really good gauge on the population density there. Versus Alcova, where a ton of people fish for kokanee at Alcova, and we have pretty good information that, you know, the populations have up and downs, of course, just like every fish species, but they're doing just fine there.
When do you ever get phone calls that are like, Matt, I don't know what this fish is. This doesn't look like anything that I've ever caught before. And they just snagged it, because you really have to be fishing at a certain depth and level for kokanee. So it really is kind of an accident probably to catch it.
You know, we get those calls all the time, and it's pretty incredible, especially, you know, not just during the summer when they have their silver flaring up, but a lot in the fall when they're red and they look exactly like a salmon. We have so many phone calls and we're like, what is going on with this fish?
Yeah, I think, you know, they're certainly the spawning fish in the fall are really noticeable, and that's probably the majority of the calls, at least that I field. I think, you know, the nature of kokanee, people don't really accidentally catch them in the summertime. It's a very specific technique that you have to use. It's a very targeted sort of fishing. And, you know, if you're out at Alcova, maybe you're trying to catch a walleye, or you're just trolling crankbaits around trying to catch whatever's going to bite, you're not going to catch a kokanee. So the guys that know how to fish for kokanee tend to be the ones that catch them in the summertime when they're silver. But certainly in the fall, we get a lot of calls. Probably one of the biggest calls that I get are people that are trying to catch kokanee, and they send me lots of pictures of silver rainbow trout. Did I finally get a kokanee? You know, sometimes one of the strains of rainbows we have been stocking recently are very silver. They don't have very many spots on them, so they can fairly easily be mistaken for a kokanee. So unfortunately, I have to let those folks down and be like, well, no, that's actually a rainbow. But it's a unique strain of rainbow, so it's cool, you know.
It's a cool thing because it's unique, but you're letting them down big time. Destroyer.
Yeah, they thought they finally had their kokanee, but yeah, they're known as a very finicky fish. They're really, really fussy about what color lure you're throwing at them, how fast you're trolling it, how deep you're trolling it, the time of day, and it's a pattern that seems to change almost hourly at times. You know, they might want chartreuse right now, but later this afternoon you couldn't buy a fish on a chartreuse spinner. It has to be a pink spinner, or they don't want spinners anymore. They want those little squid looking lures called hoochies. And
It almost sounds like trying to feed my kids.
Yeah.
That's like, you know, challenging for sure. So Matt, like you talk about that you initially put these fish in as kind of a management technique with walleye, because the walleye were eating all of the trout that we were stocking in. How successful has that been to find, you know, that balance? Is that something that we will continue to be putting more kokanee in? Was it not successful and now we just kind of do it for diversity reasons?
It was pretty successful. The thought behind kokanee was because they're a pelagic species, meaning they go suspend out over the deepest parts of the lake. Their habitat doesn't really overlap with walleye. And so the thought being, you know, we could stock those in there. They'll go out, they'll utilize a different part of the lake, probably not really overlap with walleye much, so they shouldn't be as susceptible to predation. And that certainly held true for the first 4 or 5 years that we stocked them. We've got some more recent evidence we had a graduate student working on some food web ecology stuff in the Upper North Platte reservoirs. And he was doing a lot of diet analysis and some isotope work to look at the feeding ecology, and he found a fair amount, not a ton, but a fair amount of evidence that there were some walleye that were keying in on kokanee. So, you know, those
smart
things are adapting
buggers
to, you know, the walleye are certainly adapting to this alternate forage source. But that being said, it's still, they're still a lot less susceptible to walleye predation than rainbows, just given their habitat preferences.
You had mentioned that the Flaming Gorge is where most people think of when they think of kokanee. What is it about Flaming Gorge? Did they just stock them there and they took off and really grew into a large population? Or are they native to that area?
Nope, they're not native. So kokanee are actually sockeye salmon, same species. It's just if they're landlocked in freshwater, they're called kokanee. And if they go out to the ocean, they're called sockeye. So, you know, they're native up and down the Pacific coast from Northern California up through Alaska. They were, my understanding, and this is a long time ago, my understanding is that they were originally stocked in Flaming Gorge to provide lake trout forage. And they kind of rapidly grew into be the probably the more popular of the two sport fish in the gorge. I think more people were interested in kokanee fishing than lake trout fishing there. And part of the reason for that is that Flaming Gorge was just cranking out enormous kokanee. Kokanee generally aren't known to get real big in places where they're really common, Washington, Oregon, California. You know, a 14, 15 inch fish, guys get pretty excited about. And Flaming Gorge was cranking out 24, 25 inch kokanee. So it became known all over the Western United States kind of as the place to go catch big kokanee. And it still is. It still has that reputation today. So, whatever it is about the gorge is a huge lake, very deep, just perfect kokanee habitat. Whatever that magic combination is leads them to do really well in there. Now, that being said, some of the fish that we've sampled out of Pathfinder, certainly when we've looked at the growth rates and the average size, they are rivaling the gorge in size in Pathfinder. So, Pathfinder looks like it's going to create, Flaming Gorge class kokanee. And we just need to figure out how many we need to stock and at what size. We've been putting about 100,000 in a year, and most anglers that are targeting them are kind of struggling to find them. It's a big lake, and that's really not a ton of fish for a lake that size. So as we kind of get this narrowed down and figure out what the right stocking rate is, we should be able to, I would never say we would replicate the quality of the gorge kokanee fishery, but I think we can come pretty close.
You had mentioned that they're not at the same level as some of the other fish, so they're down suspended a little further and kind of in a deeper area. When they go to spawn, like trout will go to a spawning area, the areas they go, where will kokanee go to do their spawning?
For the most part, some of the same habitat, they, with I guess one major exception, but the ones that move up the river are looking for the same types of habitat. They're looking for gravel, clean gravel, flowing water, a lot of oxygen, cold temperatures, things like that. But one of the kind of unique thing about kokanee is they will what's called shoal spawn, meaning they'll spawn in the lake on a gravelly shoreline or something like that. So say at Flaming Gorge, there's a whole component of that population that spawns in the lake itself. They don't run up the Green River or any of the tributaries. They spawn in Flaming Gorge itself.
I honestly only knew about kokanee from a couple of guys that were guides that, specifically, like you said, it takes a specific bait, a specific area. So I feel like this could definitely be a big thing for, Wyoming and end up being a game changer.
It was really interesting when we first put them in Alcova. We advertised, we put kokanee in, and we went around the next year. I went around town trying to buy, there's some kind of specialized tackle for kokanee. There's, like I mentioned, hoochies and wedding ring spinners and shoe peg corn and all this other stuff, Dodgers, and went around town trying to buy some of that stuff. You couldn't find, nobody in town carried kokanee tackle, and why would they? And now here we are, you go into every sporting goods store in town that I think, has fishing tackle, you'll see a little section kind of dedicated to kokanee stuff. So it really caught on, especially at Alcova. I see a lot of guys out there kokanee fishing, and we're even getting interest from outside the region. I've had guys that live in Green River, Rock Springs that fish Flaming Gorge coming up here to try it out. And one of the big draws is that, the limit is still six here, and down on Flaming Gorge, I think it's three or four. So, they want to come here because they can get a few more fish if they can find them. So, it's really taken off in popularity at Alcova. Like I said, I haven't seen that replicated on Pathfinder yet, even though the fish are bigger in Pathfinder.
Awesome. Matt, I always appreciate it. We always get the scientific factors from Matt Hawn, Wyoming Game and Fish Department. Again, kokanee here in the Casper region. You want to find out more, go to wgfd.wyo.gov. We're back with Brian Woodward, Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, coming up.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew along with Brian Woodward of Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, where, man, Brian, we're already moving through August very quickly. I've been talking to Game and Fish about how the hunting seasons are looking, and it made me think they're right here. I mean, it's just a couple months away from that big game season.
Yeah, I actually had a customer this week that shot a sheep with his Raven crossbow and sent me pictures. So, I mean, the seasons are here.
And, you know, one thing that we always talk about, and, you know, it's important because if you're getting out into the wilderness, anywhere, if you're hiking or if you're going back to fish in the backcountry or hunt, boy, your feet are important. And, you know, when it comes to boots, you got a break-in. There's a break-in period that people don't think about a lot of times, I think.
Well, and a lot of times, you know, we put those boots away at the end of winter and we don't pull them out or don't look at them. And there's a lot of care and just, you know, basic needs for even just, you know, taking care of those boots, whether it's, you know, some waterproofing, some oil to, you know, get the leather back into under condition. A lot of times, you know, if you're wearing a rubber boot, you know, those soles, you know, you kind of forget that they were starting to leak last year or the year before. So there's a lot of stuff that you can do, you know, moving into this hunting season to get yourself prepared. You know, a good set of socks, you know, pull those boots out, see if you need to recondition those. You know, you want them to be able to, you know, cure and kind of get all that waterproofing taken care of. So, and then, of course, if you're going to buy a new pair of boots, I mean, yeah, that break-in period is going to be pretty important, you know. So you're going to have to put some miles on those things to make sure that they're broken properly.
Are there different levels of break-in for the different types of boots? Because I know, like, the muck boots, does it have the same type of break-in that maybe just a regular hiking boot would have?
Yeah, well, I would say that the muck boots are typically not like a performance boot in terms of you're not putting 4, 5, 10 miles on them. You know, you might be using them to, you know, just chores around the house or shoveling snow, or you might be using those in a hunting situation or maybe in a waterfowl situation. But in the most case, you know, you're not putting a lot of miles on them. So in terms of break-in process, I would say there's very little. However, when you're buying a nice set of Kennetrex or Danner boots and they're, a stiffer leather boot, that's going to require quite a bit more break-in time. So, you know, I think Kennetrex says it's a 50-mile break-in. Danner, you know, I don't know, put them on and start wearing them. You know, they're usually comfortable enough that, you know, you can wear them to work for the first half of the day and then throw your work boots on after that.
Which is kind of interesting because you think 50 miles, that's a long way to go on a pair of boots. But if you're wearing them and breaking them in every day, you know, that you rack up those miles pretty quickly. So it's not that big of a task. You just got to get your foot used to it and the boot used to your foot.
Otherwise, you take a walk out to Alcova and back.
Yeah, right. That'll do her every time.
Right there. Yeah. One time.
You know what? The thought's good, but no thanks. No thanks. But, you know, and one thing that we have talked in the past is when you're breaking in those boots, maybe a good time to throw that pack on your back to kind of let your body get acclimated to that.
Yeah, it definitely helps. You know, I mean, I know people that leading into the seasons, depending on what type of a hunt they're going on, you know, I've got a couple other buddies that are getting ready to do some more bighorn sheep, and that's going to require, you know, probably more elevation on a steeper incline and probably on shale rock and, you know, loose footing. But a lot of those guys, you know, are trying to get in shape now, dropping the pounds, putting the pack on, throwing some weight in there. I got a guy around my neighborhood, him and his wife go for a walk every night with the dogs, and, you know, he's got a backpack full of something because he's got the weight in it.
And you can tell when you're doing that you take that off. Even if you don't wear the pack when you're in the backcountry climbing around, if you lose that 50 pounds that you've got in there, I mean, that's huge.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's amazing. You just, you know, it kind of depends on what level of seriousness you are, I guess.
Yeah,
you know,
right. I mean, so the new season of Alone is out. I don't know if you've watched that season yet, but they're in Africa. Oh, and one of the participants gets a warthog. She shoots a warthog with a bow, and she has a pack, and she tries to put the warthog in the pack and carry it out, but it's not big enough. Right. But there are packs that are made specifically for that.
Yeah, most of these packs anymore have like a meat bag that you can attach to or maybe even come with. And, you know, I've been in a couple hunts where we were far enough in and late enough in the day that, you know, or it was the conditions were just warm where we wanted to just make one trip out. And, you know, really the only option at that point is to just debone it right there in the field. You know, you're cutting the weight of the bone. It's not as long. It's not as, you know, awkward. It's just a lot of weight. So those are options. And these meat bags, Stone Glacier's got some out there that are just really nice. They're reusable. But, you know, when you get into that backcountry, gives you some options and whether you need to debone it, whether you can get away with just quartering it, et cetera.
So when folks are really looking at the size of pack they need, if you're going in deep, you're going to have equipment. You're going to have all this stuff that you're taking with you. Do you get an oversized bag or, you know, what's the best way to go about figuring it out?
That's always, you know, a question, right? I mean, when you're packing in, you know, you don't want to be layered up with a bunch of real heavy coats and jackets. Usually, you know, you're going to be sweating. And so you want to be able to want to be able to roll up my my jacket and be able to, you know, strap it onto my pack. And then as the day gets colder or as the night falls and I need to put that heavier jacket on, I still have it accessible. You know, if you're going in early season, you know, you might want to be able to put a pad or a tent or, you know, those types of things. So not only are you looking at, you know, how I can carry my meat in and out or my gear in and out and then carry the meat out, you know, and it might be one of those situations where, hey, I'm going to go in, I'm going to be setting up a tent, and then when I harvest something, I'm going to have to get it out. So usually, you know, leave yourself enough room that you can maybe get, you know, a quarter or a front and a rear out, and then offload your tent and gear and stuff, and then make on your second trip in, you can get the rest of it.
Yeah, and obviously if you're heading out into the field, it's always a good idea. Stop in here to Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, because you may think you have everything, but then you're like, oh, man, I forgot I used my entire roll of backwoods toilet paper, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of stuff that, you know, as you start going through your gear and getting ready for this season here, you know, it might have been 2 years before you haven't drawn a tag, you know, and you're like, oh, boy, I just pulled the jet boil out and I realized I'm out of fuel or, you know, or need a few more meals or I need waterproof matches or whatever the case is. So you know, being prepared and getting that stuff out early and being ready for that is super important. So now's the time.
Get over here, check them out, Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And don't forget the new Facebook page. Look for Rocky Mountain Discount Sports Casper. Give it a follow and you can find all the deals that are happening right here at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew and Brian back. Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, your one-stop shop for everything outdoors, whether it's hunting or hiking like we were chatting a little while ago, or maybe fishing. And we're down to the final weekend of the Wyoming Walleye Stampede. Today, the final day of the championship.
Yep, today we find out how everyone's hard work, but to, you know, secure our team of the year winners will be identified today. There's kind of a tight race in the top three for that. And then, of course, our championship sponsored by Skeeter Boats and Bellwood that is pretty prestigious. There's a lot of money on the table right now.
Yeah, Steve Stoudemire will be on with us here in just a little bit and kind of explain a little more of what they're doing for the anglers this time. And I know this being the championship, being late season, hot temperatures, luckily I think we're going to have more of a fall-like week ahead of us. So maybe that'll start with, you know, a Sunday of coolness.
Yeah, I could only hope. You know, last week was pretty toasty. So, yeah, just that cooler fall weather will be very welcoming.
So when you're looking at this tournament, to be in the championship late season, Game and Fish is like, listen, you know, we don't want these out of the water very long, so let's make this a quick process, and that's what you guys do.
Yeah, so for this event and any event really after July 1st, we've always adapted to a catch photo release. So obviously there's no rules about, you know, catching a fish, taking a picture, and releasing it. So these anglers will not be putting any fish in any live wells at any time. In fact, we are boarding boats all throughout the weekend, making sure that the live wells are empty, that they're not holding fish, that there's no funny business going on. But yeah, we found that this program, I mean, is very safe for the fish. And, you know, we'll probably measure in 700 fish over the weekend. And generally, we see one or two fish mortality, which, you know, is certainly better than harvesting 700 fish. So it's great for the fisheries. It's good for the communities. Obviously, there's a lot of guys up here supporting the towns of Shoshone and Thermopolis, and Riverton's getting some action as well. In fact, my parents are over there gambling my inheritance away as we speak. And not that they're never mind. Anyways,
yeah, right.
I mean, it's a great format. You know, it's less exciting for those that are trying to watch an event. You know, it's not like the Bassmaster Classic where they're coming up on stage and, you know, pulling out a bag. But in terms of taking care of our fisheries and not depleting our resources, I mean, it's a great way to handle it.
When you're at pleasure fishing, you know, you're not trying to score that, you know, the championship. How are you fishing August at Boisett?
Well, you know, I've talked to quite a few different anglers that have been out throughout the week, and we're seeing this a little bit today too, is that, you know, when you get those warmer temperatures, we're gonna find fish shallow, and we're gonna find fish a little bit deeper as well. So there's guys that have been pitching cranks, pitching plastics, pitching worms on a jig presentation, and then we've got the guys that are trolling. You know, there's a fish being caught suspended, you know, just, you know, 5 to 10 foot underneath the surface. And we're also finding guys that are running worm harnesses out from anywhere from 5 foot all the way out to probably 25 foot.
So really, it's a smorgasbord of you know, types of fishing. If you know, you may not like one, but you can try something else too.
Yeah, and there's definitely, you know, the guys that like what they like, you know, and so these anglers have to be really adaptive and diversified in their techniques. So guys that, you know, there's been a handful of guys that have been here most of the week. You know, they're trying to identify the weather patterns and watching their graphs, watching their electronics, using forward-facing sonar, side imaging, you name it, to identify parts of the lake that might be holding bigger quality or better quality fish. There's also guys that are, you know, exploring, you know, whether they're going after suspended fish, you know, fish out in the middle of the lake that are over these old sunken trees. And there's other guys that are just back in the bays and looking for bait, trying to identify where the perch and the crappies and all those other bait fish that are out there, you know, where they're at, and trying to probably mock what, you know, match the hatch, trying to see which crankbait's going to work best. If they're on a trolling pattern or if they're on a worm harness, they might be looking at changing out different blades, going with different styles, different sizes. We'll know by the end of the day, you know, which one of those presentations worked best.
Well, I remember talking to Lee and Anthony, the winners of the first ones, Apodaca, right?
Mm-hmm.
And and Lee's philosophy is, I don't fish the places I want to fish. I just go check out the other places that I, you know, kind of want to look at. You know,
yeah, there's a lot of guys that do that. There's, you know, I refer to it as memory fishing, right? You're like, okay, well, last year, this tournament or this time frame or this water condition or this water level, you know, this is where I caught fish. And so the memory fishing, you know, typically is okay because, you know, depending on the conditions, you know, those fish like a certain area because they like it, because it either has some weed structures, the bait fish tend to head out or, you know, stay on these sections, especially in the spring. It might be a gravel bed. During the summer or later summer months, it might be because there's weed beds and the bugs and the minnows or all that kind of stuff is in those weeds. So the memory fishing does work pretty well. And so, but you still have to check them out at one point or another, right? You know? And so you have to have confidence in those positions and those parts of the lake. And then, you know, the presentation changes. You know, I really like throwing just a jig and a worm at Glendale, but you know, for this year, I didn't have much luck doing that. There was other presentations that were a much stronger presentation. So the memory fishing is good, and a lot of these guys have spent a lot of time. I mean, you know, the walleye circuit started back in like 92. So the guys that were fishing those circuits, you know, have a lot of, well, they've all transitioned over our circuit because there is no more walleye circuit. So they're all fishing the Stampede now. And so you've got some of these guys that have, you know, 40 years of experience on these reservoirs, and they've seen all kinds of different conditions. And they're still trying to figure it out.
It's the fun part of it, you know, and it's fishing, not catching. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot that goes into the game of it.
Well, it's a challenge all in all. Like, but you know, really, it's not so much that you're competing against other anglers. You're competing against Mother Nature and the fish,
right?
You know, I mean, you got to figure out what are these guys doing. You know, I mean, you hopefully you figure it out a little bit better than the next guy. Maybe hopefully you just hope for the good luck, but. You know, this is 60 of our best anglers across, you know, 4 or 5 states. And these guys are diversified. They're versatile. They are coming, you know, here with minnows and leeches and worms and crankbaits and worm harnesses and every type of presentation you can think of to try to hammer it down, you know, up till this weekend to figure out what the best bite is going
to
be.
Well, and that's the thing. I talked to Steve Stottlemyre, which we'll play that in just a bit, but he said he's been fishing the Stampede since the beginning. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of guys that every year they mark off, you know, what, 4 weeks off the calendar. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's dedication for 16 years.
You know, people just like what they like. You know, I mean, if you really like throwing darts or shooting pool, you'd mark it off your calendar also. You know, like every Thursday night I'm bowling or every, right. You know, and so this is just one of those things that, you know, it's a great, great pastime. You know, fishing in general is a great opportunity to spend time with your buddy or your wife or your kid or whatever. And I always joke with Lee and his son, because, you know, Lee's like, I don't know why I do this. It's so stressful. I'm like, he's like, I think I'm just going to stop. I'm like, well, yeah, but like, how often do you get the opportunity to spend 2 or 3 days, 8, 9 hours a day in a boat with your kid? You know, and that time's pretty precious, and you can't really put a price on it.
And it's a lot better when you cash a $10,000 check at the end of that.
That never hurts.
Well, we are at the championship, which means that the Stampede for this year will wrap up today. But that doesn't mean you can't start looking ahead to 2026. I know that you guys have already started working on planning that out. And, you know, it'll be after the first of the year before you kind of really get the information out there. But it's lurking.
Yeah, you know, we've got a lot on the plate to kind of try to decipher. You know, we think that our tournament circuit has been successful in a lot of cases because, you know, we try to put tournaments on bodies of water where the fishing is the best at the best time. And we generally do that. And that's why we have 2 tournaments at Glendo. It typically fishes really well. Everybody's catching fish, and, you know, everybody's, you know, 1 fish away from cashing a check, you know, in a lot of cases. So, but, you know, with the water levels being a concern at Pathfinder and Seminole, you know, we're kind of looking at potentially different options, but there's not a lot of options out there. So we're gonna probably get our advisory panel together and talk it out and figure out what we're gonna do for bodies of water. But we've got great support at each one of these communities where we're holding these events, so we definitely want to continue to support them and run these tournaments at all these outlying locations as well.
Very good. Make sure to go check it out, the Wyoming Walleye Stampede on Facebook. Probably the easiest way is to follow on Facebook and see the live video in the mornings and updates throughout the day.
That's right.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
With Steve Stottlemyre with Bellwood Boats. Of course, Bellwood, a dealer of Skeeter and Glendo. And if you've been to Glendo Reservoir, you've passed by Bellwood Boats right there. It's on the right as you turn left to get to the reservoir. Steve, how are you today?
Oh, great. Drew, how are you doing?
Oh, man, it's great. And I know we're getting all pumped up to head over to Boysen, where the championship will be for the Wyoming Walleye Stampede, and you're already there, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I'm actually up and sitting in Thermopolis right now, getting ready to head up to do some more pre-fishing this morning.
Oh, that's awesome. How's the weather there?
It's been pretty hot, actually. We're used to that over here at Boysen, though. It's been hot. Yesterday we had a little breeze when we were fishing, so it wasn't too bad, but Certainly plenty warm.
Yeah, I know over the next couple of days, it's definitely going to be really, really warm. And Steve, you've been with Bellwood Boats there for a little while now, and give us a rundown. What do they offer, and what's it like at Bellwood?
Well, Bellwood's, we do everything at Bellwood. So it's super busy during the summer, especially this time of the year. So I've been running Skeeter Boats for a while now and had an opportunity to come in and work with Paul and Jackie this summer, just to kind of help them sell some boats. And it's been really fun, but I've also learned about all the other things that Bellwood Boats does, and, from service to, electronics to you name it. If you have it on your boat, Bellwood Boats can help you out with it. And that's been something that's been eye-opening for me, being there all summer with them.
Being with, the Stampede for a few years now and getting to see a lot of those Skeeters. And I know Mitch with the Stampede always has a Skeeter boat that he's riding around in. And, boy, they're some fancy, comfortable, smooth-riding boats.
Yeah, I have to say, Mitch is on our pro staff. He's actually was our first pro staff guy, and really turned me onto the Skeeter boats. I mean, I knew Paul brought them in. I was always running aluminum boats. I was one of those guys that, I guess maybe was stubborn. So I've been fishing the tournament series for 30 years now, and Mitch, was like, well, come in, take a ride with me. Let's get out in the Skeeters. And I started, I did that with him, and I was like, wow, these are nice. The ride, just the fishability of the boats. And I was impressed with Skeeter, and that's what made me switch myself. So I really credit Mitch with converting me over to the Skeeters and opening my eyes. And Skeeter's the same way, the customer service and, standing behind their boats and, they've been in business for over 75 years. A lot of people, haven't heard of the Skeeters, and now you're starting to see them really dominate.
One of the things that Skeeter Boats and Bellwood does is sponsor parts of the Wyoming Walleye Stampede and the championship coming up this week. So, it's a good opportunity for Bellwood and for Skeeter to really step up.
That was another thing that really drew me to, I fish the Stampede Series. We have a couple tournaments at Glendoe. I live in Glendoe. So having that, the service there, if I have any issues, but really supporting the people that support the Stampede, and Bellwood Boats has been on board since the Stampede started. But really now with the Skeeter, the Bellwood Bonus Program, they're really the top sponsor. I mean, the money that they're giving back to the anglers, and I would see guys in Skeeter boats winning checks that were larger than I would get, to where I finished, and I'm like, why not get a Skeeter? And whether it's money back from Yamaha, money directly from Skeeter or Bellwood boats, the payouts are tremendous. The Skeeter boats are great. The service at Bellwood is great. So it's just an all-around win-win for the anglers to be in a Skeeter, for sure.
It's kind of interesting because you guys are adding quite a little bit when it comes to the championship, aren't you?
Yeah, we actually haven't even announced this yet, Drew, but we have. So just with what the anglers know right now, we have $2,000 from Skeeter. So if you're the top-placing Skeeter, you're going to get $2,000. If you're in a Bellwood Skeeter, you're going to get an additional $2,000. Yamaha, if that coincides with you're the top Yamaha motor, that's another $1,500. So that's before you get paid out for the tournament. If you happen to win, if you're in first place in a Skeeter, that's going to be an additional $10,000. And again, we haven't even talked about the tournament payouts. But what we're going to do, again, I guess I may as well announce it right now. If you're the top, if you win the tournament, and this won't matter if you're in a Skeeter or whatever your boat is, Bellwood and Skeeter have partnership to put in another $10,000 for first place. And we're actually going to do the top five. And it's actually going to be a credit towards a new Skeeter boat. So you're going to get $10,000 to buy a new boat.
Wow. So that's on top of what you win at the tournament. And then $10,000 for a new boat. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's like I said, we haven't even announced that. It's something that we've just put together here the last few days, and we're really excited about that. And it's actually going to pay down to fifth place, so there's going to be a credit for all the guys that are in the top five. You're going to get a substantial pile of cash to put towards a new boat. You know, it will have to be towards a new boat purchase, but we got a lot of guys that are wanting to get into a skier boat, and new boats aren't cheap, you know, don't get me wrong, but but a lot of these tournament guys, that's their hobby, it's their fun, and that's what they you know, want to do is get themselves in a new boat. So we're hoping to help them. And again, you know, it's something that if you can place well, you're going to have an opportunity to get some more money. And again, that's from Skeeter and Bellwood Boats. Nobody else is putting that type of money back into the angler's hands.
That is incredible. And I'll tell you that, you know, Bellwood being such a big sponsor, and Skeeter as well, it's always been fun to see these opportunities pop up for anglers. It's maybe somebody that's been running around a boat for the last 20 years and they need to get into a new boat. This is a great opportunity for them. So, Steve, bellwoodboats.biz is the website where folks can go check out, see the boats that are for sale. You can even rent boats there at Bellwood in Glendale. So it's a great opportunity for folks to get out on the water and enjoy with a great company.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, a thing that we get a lot of, we rent a lot of pontoon boats. We have a fishing boat. We have some Montara wake boats, and really being able to rent boats in Glendale, you know, a lot of people might not want to own a boat. They don't have a place to store it, or they don't want to have a boat year round. So that opportunity to come and rent a boat and have fun with your family. We have all kinds of folks that come from all over. I mean, even from other countries that come in and rent boats from us. So that's kind of neat, you know, and again, even if you don't have a vehicle to get to pull your boat to the lake, we'll deliver you, get you set up, train you on how to use the boat, send you out, let you have a good time, and then we'll pick you up at the end of the day, fill it up with gas, take really all of the headaches away from boat ownership, and just let you have fun with your family or friends or whatever it may be. So just another thing that we do at Bellwood.
That's awesome. Very, very good. Well, Steve, I appreciate you chatting with me, and good luck this weekend as you're competing in this championship.
Yeah, and thanks, Drew. It was great chatting with you this morning. I do want to thank the Stampede guys, you know, again, for all their work. Mitch and Brian do an outstanding job. If anybody is thinking about fishing tournaments, you know, check in with those guys. They're happy to talk through what it looks like. Any of the anglers, you know, that fish those tournaments are also all great guys. We're always encouraging, especially the kids, to get them involved. So just reach out to any of us. Again, you know, Bellwood Boats. If you know, a Skeeter boat's not in your price range and you just want to get into fishing, you know, I've sold boats as low as $2,000 this year, just, you know, entry level boats, used boats. So I would encourage anybody, you know, give us a call, stop by, come see us, and let us know how we can help you out. And really appreciate it, Drew. I guess I better get out on the lake and see if I can figure out a bite.
Very good. Steve Stottemeyer, thank you so much. Again, go check him out, bellwoodboats.biz, and you can get linked up with Skeeter there as well. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Yep, have a good one, Drew. Thank you.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.